It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast, and I'm Dave Richmond, and also with me today, we're welcome back, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, man? Retro gamer.
Going on, Dave.
Yeah, man. And vehicle, a car extraordinaire, Kyle from LaGrange.
Yeah. As the song goes, I'm back, and better than ever. I have
Don't call it a comeback.
Making things better.
That's right. And we also have Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, dude?
Doing well, guys. Beautiful Friday morning here in Salisbury.
I'm actually enjoying a day off.
You know, Bubba, the Salisbury is where Salisbury Steak was invented.
It's the home of Food Lion and Cheerwine.
Cheerwine.
It's also where Salisbury Steak was.
I don't think that's true.
It's true. Hey, okay, when's the Cheerwine Festival, Bubba?
No idea.
Well, I asked.
I'm trying to remember if it was last. Last year, or a couple years ago, there was the 100th anniversary of Cheerwine. So
yeah, I think it was last year.
It's pretty cool with some commemorative cans, glass bottles, et cetera.
I do know Smash Mouth is headlining the Cheerwine Festival this year, but I can't remember when it is.
Yeah, you can be an all-star.
Hey, now.
They're going to be walking in the sun. There's enough. Okay, that's enough Smash Mouth. I do like them.
Yeah, they're good.
That's pretty cool.
That's fun.
Yeah,
it's a good festival, Bob.
Kids,
you ever been?
Hey, Kyle. You have in the Cheerwine Festival in Salisbury, you have Smash Mouth. You go to Kinston, you have XL. So
that's right.
I'm sorry.
I just wanted to make you laugh. By the way, come on out to the barbecue festival this weekend. And I want to say something on a personal note before we get started. The executive director at LIB in Kinston, North Carolina, Ray Amiette, passed away of pancreatic cancer this week. And
oh,
so
no.
thoughts and prayers to his family and everybody who, you know, has worked with Ray or have been associated with Ray, you know, in the community. The barbecue festival, we always do the T-shirts for the barbecue festival. Ray's always there as executive director, but he always went himself and ran the booth selling the T-shirts for the barbecue festival. So he won't be doing it this year. It'll be weird not being out there. But so come on out to the barbecue festival tomorrow as this podcast. When are we dropping this podcast, guys?
Today, Friday.
Okay, so it's Friday. So Saturday, what is it, the 5th? Come on out to the barbecue festival in Kinston.
The 4th.
May the 4th be with you.
Yeah, exactly.
So Saturday the 4th, come on out to the barbecue festival in Kinston and stop by the LIB Graphic Solutions booth and get yourself a barbecue festival T-shirt and thank you, Ray.
Also, while Bubba and Kyle, I wanted to mention this is our first full podcast with the team back together, and I wanted to take a moment to, before we get talking fun about East Carolina sports, very sad tragedy on Tuesday night at UNC Charlotte, right, guys?
Yeah, and just horrible. I know my family and I, we just finished eating supper, and then Stacy sent me a text. It was a screenshot of one of her cousin's Facebook feed, and her second cousin was actually in that classroom where the shooting happened. So fortunately, she was able to get out. She did have some cuts and bruises, those sorts of things. But main thing is that she's alive and well. But kudos to Riley Howe, who's a 21-year-old UNC Charlotte student that passed. According to everything that I've seen and heard and read, that's what he did, an awful lot to prevent the tragedy from becoming even worse and more people passing as he attacked the gunman and did everything he could to get him on the ground and disarm him.
Yeah, let's remember his name, Riley Howell, and let's not remember the shooter's name. And I understand the shooter might have some issues with autism, so that does put a little bit of a different spin on the situation with him. Nonetheless, it's still, let's concentrate on what Riley did to prevent more people from being killed and how brave he was. And man, we're all going to die. We're all going to die. You don't want anybody to die at 21, and I'm not trying to sound insensitive when I say that, but you know what he did, he's going to be remembered forever as a hero. And
that's what we need to focus on. You're exactly right.
So
the media does a terrible job of focusing on all the time on the shooter. And that's why they do it. That's why they do it, is to get recognition. And, you know, Columbine is 20 years old, hard to believe.
Ratings. It's all about ratings. That's the drama. It's ratings. And,
yeah, 24-hour news cycle.
I mean, we all know the name. Will, I can't think of their names right now, but we all know the Trench Coat Mafia and Columbine. And, you know, one of the three of us can probably say the names of the shooters, and I can't tell you not one name of any of the victims, so that's a shame.
Well, I don't pay attention.
And Dave,
yeah, go ahead, Bubba.
I was going to say, Dave, something else. Of course, this week you have the Wells Fargo Championship going on at Quail Hollow Golf Course there in Charlotte, and the golfers were wearing green ribbons to honor those affected by the tragedy.
Very sad situation, and I tell you, I was thinking about this before we did the podcast, knowing that we were going to record this morning. I was thinking about how we love doing the podcast. We love talking about sports, but when stuff like that happens, it reminds you how sports is not as big as what we always like for it to be. But
and something that can happen anywhere, you know, it's happened at Virginia Tech, it's happened at Charlotte, happened up at NIU. It can happen anywhere. It can happen, God forbid, but it could happen in East Carolina. It could happen at any public school in North Carolina. Bubba, you're a teacher. Bubba, as a teacher, do you ever think about that? Do you ever go over scenarios in your head what you would do in that situation?
Oh, yeah. Annually, we have to go through different training videos and those sorts of things and talk through exactly what we would do in an instance such as that.
Another thing, too, guys, is the fact that I'm very proud of Martin County because my kid's school, after you get the kids in there, they basically go on lockdown. You can't get in that school after the school starts. And I think that's great because you don't know if there's going to be a domestic situation where maybe, you know, God knows, I don't want to, like, dream up something. But it just I really am happy. They also got grant money where every single school in Martin County has a resource officer. And so I'm very happy about that, that I know the resource officer personally, but they're doing things like that. It's what we're going to have to do. It's a shame that we have to go to where we have to have locked doors and different things, but if that's what we have to do, then that's what we have to do.
Well, we got two issues, and I don't want to make this a political objective, but there's two issues going on here, and one of them is just a mental health issue, and we got to do something about mental health in this country. And the other one, and I'm a gun owner. I own four guns. But there is an issue with, you know, do we know what weapon was used in this? It was a handgun, a rifle? What do we know?
I've never heard. But all I know is that when you talk about mental health, For example, the state lawmakers, Democrats and Republicans, so everybody probably thinks I'm one way or the other, but they had this brilliant idea, and I say that sarcastically, to shut down Dorothea Dix in Raleigh, the state mental hospital. And when they did that, that was, to me, a symbol that we don't care about mental health. And everybody says, how can you say that? Well, they shut down the state facility. And then they said it was antiquated. Well, build a new one. Do whatever you have to do to do that. So that and the fact that we need to make sure that we don't cut funding. Mental health seems to be always one of the first things they cut when we have a real problem.
Well, another thing we need to do is and I think we've gotten better about not looking at mental health issues, not carrying stigmas. If you're on an antidepressant, if you're on some for anxiety and antipsychotic, whatever. People just have problems, and if you need help, go get help. There are people out there to help you that want to help you, and you know, don't be ashamed if you have to take a medicine or if you need to go see a therapist. And what we also need to do, we don't need to ban any kind of guns. So I'll be very clear when I say that, but we do need better gun laws. No guns need to be banned. But we need to make getting them not as easy. We'll get off this topic. One thing that never makes any sense to me, I have to get a permit to buy a pistol, even if it's a .22 caliber pistol. But I can go buy any rifle I want, including, you know, like an assault rifle, without a permit. And that never registers with me. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, Kyle, let's actually go to some positive news, and I know that we can do that. Hey, Bubba, you know, when I got the word last night, I think it was a tweet, but how about those season tickets, man? That's awesome for Pirate football.
Yeah, I know. I heard late last night as well that we sold more than 12,000 now, so things have really increased as we thought they would. I know the other day I said I wasn't surprised that we sold 10,000, and I definitely still stand by that. But over the last, I guess, week, we've sold more than 5,100 tickets, which is just excellent. So it's great to see that things are getting to where they need to be. I really think that we'll top 12,000, or excuse me, 15,000, and just very excited to see Pirate Nation supporting the program like we know we can.
Very excited about it because, you know, I told you on our last podcast before the Adams one we had, which is a special 1983 series, folks, that you need to listen to. We'll talk about that towards the end of the podcast on promoting previous shows and upcoming shows. We'll talk about that. But I tell you what, I'm so excited. You know, I was telling you that before I heard that number, I was like, if we could just get north of like 15, 16, like I had 16,000 because I wanted like 13 or close to 13,000.
Yeah, it was right around 13, give or take a little bit last year.
Yeah.
So we're not far from reaching that mark already, and we obviously have the entire summer to go. So over the next, I guess, what, 4 months, really. I mean, because obviously season tickets are sold up there until the start of the season. So, I mean, over the next 3.5-4 months, a lot more are going to get sold, and hopefully we'll blow 15,000 out of the water.
And if you have a payment plan like I do, it's coming out in the next couple of days, your first payment for the ticket. So just to give everybody a FYI for May 5th or 6th, I guess it'll be. But anyway, good luck to the Pirates. Obviously, that's going to be great for the season. And it just goes to show when you have a guy like Mike Houston, how I didn't know how things were going to go, like I was telling you the other day. But then on the other hand, when you were talking about it, a guy that's 80-25, he's bringing back pretty much his his whole staff, and then the other two guys are guys he's already worked with and has connections to. They're all great recruiters. Everything, they've done an excellent job selling the program. And you look at Mike Houston and his wife Amanda, I mean, they're at all these ball games and stuff. I mean, that was the 411 we got from folks in Harrisonburg. I mean, just with JMU, that he was like all around the community in Harrisonburg and all that, and he's also a great start in Greenville.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. To put it in his words, when we talked to folks up there in Harrisonburg, like you said, Dave Thomas and others, they had nothing but excellent things to say. They were very sad that he was leaving because he was that way. And not only did he win football games, he just did things right all the way around and really exemplified a winning mindset in every facet of his life. But yeah, as far as things go here in Greenville, he's really just hit the ground running over the last several months, and just so excited about where this program's headed. And the logic that I was using as far as not being surprised with us reaching that 10,000 season ticket mark by that May 1st deadline, as far as Pirate Club priority, my logic was coming out of 2015 with people being so ticked off about the way things went down with Coach Ruff, we still actually sold more season tickets in Coach Moe's first year, I believe, than we had in Ruff's last year. So that's kind of where I was coming from and why I thought that we would reach that number without a problem, which we did by more than 2,000.
Yeah, 1,000 season tickets sold already.
Yeah. I mean, Kyle, you and I were talking earlier, that 16, you know, if we could get anywhere in that ballpark, 16,000, and who knows, we might, the way we're going, what do you think, based on where we are now, do you think we could get something like 17 or 18, or is that stretching?
I don't know. You got to wonder. The people that have already ordered are the people that are excited that Coach Houston's here.
Yeah.
And that Moe's gone, and they're excited that conference gone and Gilbert's here and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sure there will be, you know, more season tickets ordered. Obviously, I think we'll get the 15. Probably going to have a lull period, and then it'll get hot again in August, I'm sure. But as far as getting to 17, 18, I doubt it. Probably not this year. But, yeah, I would think 15 to 16 is certainly attainable for sure. I think if we have a good year this year, if we can get up around 6-6, then I think 2020 is where you'll see us jump up to between 18 and 20 again. But, I think if you get to 15, anything over that's gravy.
Well, another thing, you know, we were talking about earlier too, Kyle, is that before the podcast is the very fact that one of the things that's really hurting us, and kudos to the administration for bringing the price tag. I mean, mine were $300 a seat, and now they're $240. So,
well, we lost the home game. We lost the home game, and then we downgraded Virginia Tech to the Gardner Webb. So, or not Gardner Webb. I'm sorry,
William Mary.
So,
right.
Losing, going from 7-6 home games, and losing a Power 5 opponent to an FCS. Yeah, they had no choice but to go down called season tickets.
I think that helps in the Houston thing. And another thing is, the one thing that I'm concerned about is, because we don't have those big matchups like we do from the ACC and other regional opponents, that hurts us as far as walk-up tickets and who knows.
It does,
but
I'll tell you
another thing, too, is one thing will help ticket sales. If there's some way, we could beat NC State that first game, and then you have the opening of the what will be the Town Bank Tower.
Yeah, well, no matter what, that first game for Gardner Webb, we'll have a decent crowd.
Like 35.
Ticket sales, it's just win. Whether beating NC State, don't beat NC State. If we're putting a competitive product on the field and we start winning football games, attendance will be decent this year. I do think my thought on season ticket sales, that the reason I thought they may not reach 15 or 16 initially was because of having two FCSs and a Thursday night game.
Right.
But, you know, I think now we're already selling 12. I think we'll hit that 15 mark.
I feel really good about it. I think the Pirates are going to be looking at another great thing is, when you think about all this, I want to bring in about the Carolina Hurricanes. They have a chance to win tonight and sweep the Islanders. And just last year, everybody was like, will the Hurricanes, now they have new ownership, move to Houston? They still could do that. Houston's the fourth largest market in the country. That's always possible. Get this, guys. The attendance this year is a little up, but look at the playoffs. Every single ticket is sold in that place. Secondary market's going up to nosebleeds, at least $200 or more a piece. A crazy amount of money that people are paying for these tickets, and they were the worst attended team in the league. And all of a sudden, now that you've got a winning product, like you're talking about, Kyle, and I want to give a shout out to our good friend Andrew, who listens to this podcast, that's also a huge Canes fan. You look at things now, man, they're on a roll. They're having a chance to. They win one more game. They're in the Eastern Conference Finals, which is one step closer to the Stanley Cup Finals. Unbelievable. For a team that hasn't made the playoffs in a decade.
Well, the litmus test will be how they follow it up next year. With this success and now all the people jumping on the bandwagon, will season ticket sales increase for the Hurricanes? Will the individual – you just about know individual game tickets, particularly early next year, are going to be way, way, way up. And then I think once basketball starts, you'll see a lull. And then as we get closer to playoff race, you'll probably see attendance go back up high again.
No doubt about it. And, well, good luck to them. Hopefully they can finish things off. Well, what did you think, Kyle? You talk about it right now. John Gilbert, what did you think about our good friend Steve Inigo, Hoist the Colors radio show? What do you think about John Gilbert last night? Love Inigo did an excellent job on the interview.
Yeah, great job by Igo interviewing Gilbert. The information came out about the 12,000 season tickets. He discussed with him about the Virginia Tech game next season. He said highly unlikely that we will be playing at Virginia Tech. He said we're working on finding a game for next year. Said, you know, ideally he likes to schedule regionally, or if it's not going to be regionally, he wants to schedule a game that would be of interest. Meaning, I'm assuming he means like a bye game with a big name. And he then made the comment that probably looks like we're not going to be able to do that for next year, if I heard him right. So I'm interested to see who we're going to play. Is it going to be a home-and-home with another group of five? Is it going to be a bye game, but at some school maybe that just isn't that interesting? Like, I don't know, Mississippi State? I don't know. Did you guys – Bubba, did you get a chance to hear the interview? Dave.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I liked it. I thought that he – I think that he was pretty much saying that it's kind of like we talked earlier at lunchtime about how before the podcast, simply about how he actually is trying to – they've been dealt a bad hand, and, you know, Mr. Cliches,
sure.
But they've been dealt a bad hand last year, it looks like this year, and basically like he was talking about last night, 2020, basically you look at the Carolina series when he brought that up, they don't have an open date until 2027 at least. So you're looking at a close to a decade before you play the Tar Heels again. Then you got the issue of Virginia Tech, which 2020. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think that
you guys care to make a prediction of who will play in 2020?
I like your idea. I don't know, but I think you might be right. Maybe it's somebody that is not going to be the usual, like the big name game, but maybe we'll get a payday out of it. I don't know. That's what I'm guessing. Maybe a one-off. I don't know. I like your idea, the home and home. Is way better for us, but at this point we kind of have to make, I think, lemonade.
Right. Well, I guess it depends on who we can get a home and home meet with. I mean, if we can get a G5 home and home with a, you know, somebody like a Colorado State, I think that would be interesting. Whereas, you know, I would rather have that, a home and home with Colorado State, than a one and done at Baylor.
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree with that.
Yeah, they have the I feel like that right now at this point, if we can just make it through 2020, right? I mean, things are a lot better. And, you know, Kyle, you and I have talked about before, Comfort didn't do a lot of good things, but especially not dealing with North Carolina with scheduling. But overall, I was very happy with the scheduling.
He did a decent job scheduling. I think he did a better job scheduling than people give him credit for, and I hate Comfort. You know, we
at least you're being objective.
Boise State, Appalachian State, Wake Forest.
The home and home will be BYU, the BYU, Appalachian State.
Yeah, I said that. So,
no, I didn't hear you, sorry.
Those are all good games. Even Georgia State, even though opponent-wise it's not exciting, in terms of the trip to Atlanta, that's good. It makes sense. So, I really don't have any problems with any of the games he scheduled. Like, really, to be honest. So, I'd be interested to see, like I say, what we can get for next year.
I hope that at this point, if it's Podunk State, it'll be fine with me. Let's move on. And
enough FCS. We don't need.
No. I'm saying
schedule.
What I'm saying is my point.
Oh, it's like a home and home with a Mac. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be what it'd be.
I think basically what he's saying is, in a nice way, that what we're hoping for, like a one-off, or like we did with Florida back in 2015.
Well,
Dan, that scenario is not going
to
happen.
Think some of those we might be able to get. He also said he doesn't want to overload the schedule right now.
Right.
And then he also said that I guess some of the schools we've talked to about a one-off have kind of said the East Carolina will wait for somebody else. Because they know our reputation, even though we've been 3-9, of beating Power 5 opponents. I mean, if you're a Vanderbilt, for example, or an Indiana or a Purdue or a Maryland, and you have an opportunity to play a one-off with us, which would be a rare occasion, we'd be willing to do that, you may look at that reputation of upsetting Power 5 opponents and go, nothing.
Yeah, I agree with you. Is there other places that you – Do both of you guys know any openings in 2020? I haven't really looked at it, to be honest.
I'd have to look at the schedules. That's something I can do. I haven't, but that's a good question of who does have open dates. You typically can find a road game, though.
I don't think that's going to – until they get a big name, they're not going to promise something that they can't deliver on until they can deliver on it. So I give them credit for that. He's being transparent.
Yeah, and they need to get it done. They need to get it done sooner rather than later. They don't need to just keep waiting and waiting and waiting. I would assume if I was Gilbert, I'd like to have that opponent in place by this football season, by the beginning of this football season.
We had a chance to sit down and talk to Chad Greer, former quarterback with the East Carolina Pirates. His son, Will Greer, was actually selected by the Carolina Panthers in the third round, and he's going to be playing for his hometown team. Let's go to that interview this week we had with Chad Greer.
Well, the NFL draft is over now, and Bubba, we have a very special guest with us back again.
Yeah, we were very excited to have with us our quarterback and father of the new Carolina Panthers quarterback, and I'm, of course, talking about Will Greer. And Chad, welcome into the show.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me back.
Hey, Coach. Yeah, absolutely. Love to have you back. And first of all, how does it feel to have now your son be a draft pick and a man kind of like a hometown, right, with Charlotte?
Oh, man, it's incredible. Such a dream come true for him and so fulfilling to me. To you know, any parent wants to see their child succeed. And, you know, he pursued it with all his heart and just incredible work ethic. And so just to get to the NFL, I don't care what round, what pick, but then to do it for your hometown team that you grew up watching, I mean, golly, it doesn't really get any better than that. We're just still walking on clouds a little bit. Really excited, really proud of him.
Now, I saw some pictures and an article that was talking about you guys and the viewing party. Now, was that down in South Carolina where you're currently living? Or
no, that was at my brother's house about 3 miles from the stadium.
And okay.
And it really wasn't intended to be a viewing party. It was Will had said early on he had no interest in going to the draft. And if you know Will, that's kind of in line with his personality. He just wanted immediate family around. But he had some really unique opportunities in marketing that, you know, he's smart enough to know he needs to capitalize on that while he can. I mean, that's a way to help, you know, provide for his family. So we end up having a little more folks around than I think he originally planned. And but at the end of the day, it all was worth it. It turned out great, and it was a lot of fun.
One question that came to mind is when I was watching the draft is as far as you guys, and I knew, obviously I don't know you personally, but I got to know you the last interview now and followed his career and yours, obviously. How far in advance do you, well, this is a dying question I want to know, how far in advance do you know that Carolina is going to take, the Panthers are going to pick you?
About 2 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. You know, we'd kind of gotten to, you know, we're trying to do the math on, you know, where at that point, so things didn't go the way that we had kind of thought they were going to go, what we'd understood it was going to happen. So, you know, the dynamic shifted that we knew on Friday, you know, it was going to be a long night because second round was just going to be a run on DBs. And we knew that the teams looking for quarterbacks, you know, really weren't that many. And we also knew that, you know, Will didn't even visit Cincinnati. We knew they liked Finley, and Will didn't visit Denver. We knew they liked Fox. So, you know, kind of just looking at where the teams that liked Will and had, you know, might take a quarterback. And, you know, it just is that people trading back and moving around. You're watching that thing, and we kind of knew that, all right, if it's going to be the Panthers at 100 or the Patriots at 101, otherwise we're going, you know, order some more barbecue, do this again on Saturday. And we were kind of talking about that about the time, you know, he looks down at his phone and he goes, it's a Charlotte number. And his agent recognized the number and said, that's the Panthers. You know, of course, if they weren't calling to tell him we're not drafting, you know, just, but it was almost like we've been staring at the phone so long at so many different picks thinking that might be the call. It never rang. So when it did ring, we were all called a little by surprise. And you know, and really the thing, too, we were watching on YouTube Live, my brother's TV system set up that way, so there's a little bit of a delay. So the TV looked like the Bucks were picking. So we're in the front room, and we're going crazy, and then everybody in the other room thinks Tampa Bay just picking. So we got in there, and they're like, hey, we're going to Tampa. We're like, no, we don't know. We're going. We're staying home. That's pretty fun.
What's the reaction been for other family members? I know they're proud, but you got to be happy about what we're talking about with the Panthers, and certainly it's a great organization, and being the hometown, being our local team as well.
Well, I think that's it. I mean, literally the time he was 3 years old, he was going to games. We've had season tickets there from the very beginning. You know, Will, you know, points out he was born the same year the Panthers were born, and he's been a fan his whole life, going to games, having Panther jerseys. You know, my dad, who passed away 20 years ago, was, you know, the one that kind of orchestrated us all getting tickets together, and was a huge Panthers fan. And then you kind of go to the organization. I mean, we got to meet Mr. Tepper, and he just seems incredibly first class and very passionate about, you know, building a Super Bowl champion in Charlotte. And as, you know, we're native Charlottians for, you know, generations. And I'm probably not the first one that's left. They might disown me for leaving, but we're kind of happy down here in Charleston. But, you know, Charlotte's home, and family and friends go, you know, run deep there. And we're just, everybody that we know is just beside themselves that Will's a Panther. It's just, you know, it's almost, you know, it's more of that Walt Disney stuff, man. I don't know how to explain it and why so many great things keep happening to my kids, but I we'll take it. We sure are proud.
As two guys hosting a podcast that have sons and daughters, we're tickled, and obviously I can't imagine. Can you talk about, and Bubba, you can chime in too, can you talk about your, what was your nerves like? I can't imagine. It would be rough for me if it was like me potentially being drafted. I can't imagine being the father of a son getting ready to be drafted.
And never was nerves. I mean, I think, you know, Will and I talked a lot from the beginning, and certainly leading up to the draft, that, you know, if he really was the last pick in the last round, which we knew he was going to go before that, but if that was the case, that's still a better job opportunity he's going to get coming out of college with his degree, looking for a job. And any opportunity to go pursue his dream and his passion was going to be great. So whatever it was, any team, any round, any pick, was going to be a tremendous blessing. So there's no downside to this. And just getting picked by the Panthers just was, you know, about as good as it can get. Great organization, great opportunity, you know, home. We went looking for a place to live for about 5 hours on Sunday, and, you know, said, you know, we could be doing this in Boston or New York had it gone the way we thought it was going to go. And that'd be a lot harder to do than what we're doing. We know every street, and, you know, my sister-in-law is probably the top realtor in Charlotte. So, you know, it was a whole lot easier to do than trying to, you know, go figure it out in somewhere else far away.
Now, Chad, Carolina Panthers general manager Marty Herney, I saw a quote, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he was talking about Will having the it factor, that you can see it when you watch the film, and just in interaction with him. So obviously, he's talking about some of the intangibles, work ethic, leadership abilities, and those sorts of things. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, I got a chance to meet Marty, and really just, you know, he reminded me of the interaction with him reminded me of when we went to East Carolina and Russ offered Will a scholarship. It was almost the same kind of setup. We walked down the hallway in the building, first time being in the building, and Marty comes out the first one that greets him. He greets Will with a big hug, and, you know, just had nothing but great things to say. He just looked on his face, just looked genuine and real. And, you know, Marty's been in Charlotte a long time. He remembered Will from high school even. Just seems like a really first class guy. I mean, forget his success in the NFL, but just as a man, just a good dude. And that was kind of the vibe we got from everybody there. Just really good. North Turner's a great guy. Scott Turner and Will click, you know, right away. And Rivera's just, I mean, he's known just to be a player's coach and a guy that is easy to not a drama guy, easy to get along with, but certainly knows the game. Everybody we met there, and we know some people there just from being in Charlotte so long. The trainer, Ryan Vermillion, has been there a long time, first-class guy and family, and, you know, great to see him and connect with him in a very different way now. So just it felt like home as soon as we got in the building, and that was really rewarding.
And Chad, what's the reaction been like for, obviously, I'm in the eastern part of the state near Greenville. What's the reaction been in Charlotte for – I know it has to be great for Will being a local kid and now being a Panther.
Yeah, it has been, and I think, you know, some of that's just because a lot of the same media folks that, you know, covered him in high school are still there. And they cover the Panthers, you know, too, or their station does, or somebody's there. So just, you know, a lot of those people we've known are known for a long time and followed him through college. So, you know, I think the Observer had a big, you know, big day. Like, he played in the pro-am at the Wachovia, or Wells Fargo today. You know, he's not a, I mean, he's just kind of taking up golf. And he had to be our spring practice days, but my voice is so hoarse. so I couldn't be there. My brother worked his bag for him, and I get a text that says, "Hey, Will birdied number four." I'm like, "You got to be kidding me!" And he ended up birdieing 4 and 12. It sounds like, which somebody sent me a video of him teeing off on the first. I'm thinking, man, I think I'd have probably snapped one in the crowd and killed somebody. I don't know. But you talk about the it factor, man. It's just, nothing rattles him, man. He's just so poised and collected, and he does have that it factor. Whatever it is, he's got it. He's just a cool guy, man.
Now, Chad, he's obviously coming in behind a guy that's played nearly a decade in the league now, closing in on it anyway, and Cam Newton has taken the Panthers to the brink of a Super Bowl title. So talk a little bit about the opportunity Will will have to learn under a guy like Cam.
Well, Cam's an incredible talent. I mean, it's obvious as soon as you see him. In fact, we played we did a 7-on-7 tournament with the Panthers coming through school. There's actually a couple pictures of Cam. He was there that day at the finals and took pictures with us. He's a couple of him, you know, kind of behind Will and he's throwing. And you kind of look back at that guy, man, who would have thought? But I remember taking a picture with Cam and he put his arm around me for the picture. And I remember thinking, you know, I'm a pretty decent sized guy and this guy makes me feel like a child. I mean, he is a big man.
Yeah.
But, you know, full of personality and charisma and talent, and I think, you know, Will's going to learn a lot from being in the locker room with him and watching him play. And I think, you know, Cam was very cool, reached out to Will, and you know, I think they, you know, Will's a competitor and he's going to go compete, but he's going to do it in a way to try to push to make Cam better and to make the team the best they can be. I mean, you know, Will went to West Virginia and had to sit out. You know, he was the scout team player of the year. I mean, you know, Will's going to compete at whatever he's doing, and he's a huge win-loss guy. That's the stat he really, you know, cares about, it, and he wants to be part of a winner. And I'm sure he's going to do whatever he can to help the team win, whatever role that is.
And not only that, but when you think about football being a man's sport, Chad, he actually has to be next man up. If any, God forbid, if anything happens to Cam, then he may be the man waiting, right?
I mean, yeah, I mean, like, I think that's what he's prepared himself for and expects to do. And you know, there's two other guys in the locker room already. I mean, you know, they're going to compete. This is a job for them. I mean, they're sitting for fun. I mean, this is everybody's job. So no question, he's going to have to go compete. He's going to have to perform at a high level. But he's very confident that he can do that. And it's funny, the football stuff is the least of his concerns. And we start talking about, all right, here are things you got to get done. And, you know, the top of his concern list is having to go to DMV and get his tags and license and switch back to North Carolina. And, when it comes to football, he's like, hey, I got that. We're good.
I guess that's in his wheelhouse. And doing the errands and that kind of stuff is not something you think about on a daily basis.
No, you know, he's you know, got a just great wife that's, you know, been with him through this, the whole journey. And she's there, but again, you know, my whole family's there. You know, our whole family's there. So he's got a ton of people around him, lifelong friends, you know, lots of family that can help him with stuff. And you know, we all just, you know, we know that he needs to focus on football. And we're going to do all they can to help make that happen. And just going to enjoy being able to spend more time with him than we would have if he was somewhere else.
Now, Chad, before we wrap this thing up, obviously, I wanted to ask you about spring football down at Oceanside. How did that go? And then also, just have you had some interaction with Coach Shank, Donnie Kirkpatrick, some of those guys that are back at East Carolina now on Coach Houston's staff?
Man, well, thanks for asking. And we had he called me just right before I got on the phone with y'all, and he asked me how I went today. I said it really might be the best practice I've ever been a part of as a high school coach.
Wow.
Not that the execution was so spectacular, but the energy level, our coaches' investment of time and preparation was obvious, and just it was crisp and clean and no standing around, no wasted time, and lots of energy. It was, man, it was awesome. I can't wait to get back tomorrow. But as far as East Carolina guys, I ran into Coach Steele at a clinic. Great to catch up with him. He was actually coaching there when I was there. And then right after Will was picked, I got notes from Coach Trott, Coach Kirkpatrick, just great guys. Think the world of them, and very cool those guys to you know, be thinking of us at that time. But
I'm so excited for Holt Naylor and the guys. I think he's just a guy that's got an it factor. I think he's going to make people around him better, and I think Mike Keeson has. I mean, he wins everywhere he goes, and I'm excited to see Pirate football get back to where it's supposed to be.
Well, Chad, I hope that we can be celebrating in Raleigh on August 31st as the Pirates take on NC State. So we'll see how that plays out. We got a long time between now and then. Thank you so much. Please give our best to Will, and we're very proud of him and very proud of you. Thank you so much for the time, and we look forward to another visit with you sometime down the road soon.
Anytime, guys. I would appreciate all support of me and my family, and go Pirates, man. I'll keep them straight down there.
Thank you very much, Chad. We also had a chance to sit down this week with Garrett McGinn. He's actually this weekend at the Colts mini camp, or actually the rookie camp. Next week he has the Buffalo Bills, and let's go to that interview with Garrett right now.
Well, another exciting guest we have here on the Sports Objective. We had the NFL draft last week and recently graduated from East Carolina University. Very excited, Bubba, about our next guest.
Yeah, no Pirates were drafted, but we're going to have a few that are getting shots, and one of those is Garrett McGinn. Garrett, welcome in.
Hey, how you guys doing today? Thank you for having me on.
Good. I know how hard you worked on and off the field, and certainly I know how hard you worked getting ready for your opportunity. Can you tell all Pirate Nation what's going on? And we're very excited for you.
So definitely been working my tail off ever since I got to ECU. Came in as an undersized offensive lineman, weighing about 250, 260, and I ended my career right at 315. So
wow.
Definitely no shy of hard work, and all the credit goes to Coach Connors and that strength staff while I was there. But as of right now, got a call a couple of days ago. I'll be flying out Thursday to go to Indianapolis Colts for the rookie mini camp. And following that one, I also got invited to the Buffalo Bills.
So we hope one of the teams will be smart and pick you for sure. And I know that the hard work is sometimes the difference between making the team and not making the team, right? I know that sounds obvious, but there's some guys that have a lot of talent and they don't make the team because they just didn't put the work in.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of guys don't make it for different reasons, whether it's work ethic or football intelligence or what have you. Maybe it's just not in the cards or stuff like that. So
right.
I'm going to try and go in there with an open mind, just give it everything I have, try and learn the playbook for multiple different positions, because at the end of the day, I've played every single position, so there's no telling what I'm going to go in at. So, I mean, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go in there and just try and absorb all the coaching and do all the details and just play my game and show my athleticism, my ability, and hopefully be able to make a club.
Now, Garrett, you talked about coming into East Carolina undersized. You're from Tallahassee, Florida. So before we talk about the present more, why don't you just tell us a little bit about your path to ECU?
So growing up in Florida, honestly, I didn't really play football like that growing up. I played it here and there, played a little bit of flag football, but it really wasn't my true desire. When I was a kid, when I was younger growing up, my true passion was baseball. All the way up till high school, I wasn't even on the football team as a freshman because I was so focused on playing baseball. And then the football coaches just kept asking me to come out my sophomore year, almost quit, didn't even really like it that much. Wanted to focus on baseball, had a couple of interests in colleges from baseball, but my coach was like, hey, just stick it around just a little bit longer, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. Left Florida High, was a three-sport athlete, played football, baseball, and basketball. Graduated high school right around 250, was about 260 when I got to ECU, and then that was when I really started eating right and lifting weights and watched my body change over the course of the years.
Can you talk about, as far as your situation, when you have both Ruffing McNeil and Scotty Montgomery, can you talk about both coaches? Because I know that you thought a lot of both.
Yeah, I love both coaches. I think they were both great coaches. They're both great people off the field as well. It was definitely a challenge, but it was definitely something that really opened your eyes to college football, and you got to learn the game from two great minds, great college football minds. So it really helped me to become a better football player and just understand that life is going to throw you punches. It's all about how you roll with them. And give a lot of credit to Coach Ruffin McNeil for bringing me in there. I love him to death, still talk to him this day. And I got all the love and respect for Coach Scotty Montgomery. He's a great football coach. He's going to do great things in his career.
Go ahead, Bubba. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, in addition to two head coaches, you had, at least three, maybe four different position coaches. And one of the things that really impressed me, and I know it impressed scouts as well, is your versatility. And I think you played all five positions, at least four, if not all five. So with your athleticism, you came in at 6'6", 250, and then now you're leaving at 6'6", a little over 300 pounds?
Yeah, so I'm leaving at 6'6", 315. But, yeah, like you said, I had four offensive line coaches in 5 years. Had one, two, three offensive coordinators, two head coaches. So I've got to learn the game of football from a lot of different perspectives and learn and just try and take little things from each coach when they came in and taught me different things. And like you said, I've played every single position. I've actually started at every single position except for left tackle. And this past year, I was able to play a little bit of left tackle sparingly when we needed it, just when Deontay went down or what have you, stuff like that. So I've seen a lot of action at every single position. So I hope that's going to help me translate to the next level and hopefully make a roster somewhere.
Yeah, let's talk about that very thing. I know that you haven't been through it, but can you give us kind of an idea what you've heard going in to the rookie camp? What can Pirate Nation, what could we expect that you're going to have to go through?
So, obviously, the best way to describe it is I'm living the Pirate life right now. Anybody who's ever gone to ECU or knows anything about East Carolina, the people there don't get handed anything.
Right.
It's kind of the Pirate culture. You got to work for what you got. So, right now, it's one of those things where I'm going in. Both these teams like me at two completely different positions. So, it's just one of the great things about my position is I get looked at different positions and stuff like that, but I don't get necessarily signed, so I'm kind of an underdog. So the Indianapolis Colts like me at tackle. They think I have a good chance of sticking. They just, the way things fell in the draft and whatnot, I kind of slipped a little bit. So I'm going to go out there and just give it my all, give everything I have, and just show them that I belong on that field and show them what ECU Pirates can do.
And that's certainly the fight that you have in you definitely fits this role that you're talking about, being an underdog, because you have a lot of talent. And I was surprised that you were one of the ones I was surprised that didn't I thought you would get drafted, so that was a surprise to me. But now that I've said and done, you've got two great opportunities. From there, have you heard anything else, or those are the two main ones, I guess, right?
So those are the two main ones we're focusing on right now. So if something else comes up and all that stuff, we'll go from there. But these are the two main opportunities I'm focusing on at the moment.
What about can you give us the different dates of the rookie camp? So I take it you can't be at two places one time. Can you give us a date so we'll kind of keep you on our mind and be rooting hard for you and praying hard for you?
Yeah, so I actually fly out Thursday for the Colts rookie minicamp, which is this weekend. I'll be there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, fly back home Sunday. And then the Bills rookie minicamp, I believe, is the next weekend. So I haven't gotten all the details for that one yet, or I'm supposed to be getting them today or tomorrow. So trying to take it one step at a time and focus on each opportunity.
Absolutely. Whatever is in front of you, right? You only have the present time, so that's all you can do. As far as do they give you my curiosity is killing me, but do they give you a timetable of saying we'll tell you how you do, or is it a long waiting game? How do you know how that works?
Honestly, I don't. From the guys I've talked to and my agent and stuff like that, there's no telling. I could go out there and know it's right before I leave. Or I could get a call in the next couple of days or what have you. So, I'm not really 100% sure. It's just kind of up in the air right now. I'm just trying to focus on everything day to day. What can I do better to increase my odds? And the rest is up to him.
As I just told you, my good friend and the official trainer of this podcast is Mark Washington, Max Fitness. Can you talk about, that's on my mind right now. He killed me today. He forgets my age sometimes. I think he thinks I'm your age, but anyway, can you talk about what you've been doing in the off season? That's one of the things that came to mind when I thought about you is what kind of your, I know your work ethic, just following the team and covering the team, but what have you been doing on your own individually, or have you had a trainer, or can you tell fans what you've been doing?
Yeah. So, after I graduated and after I left ECU, early in January, I went down to Atlanta, Georgia, and trained with Chip Smith Sports Performance, trained with a bunch of different guys, some even from across our own conference, trained with a guy from Wake Forest, NC State, Carolina, UCF. So I was able to train with a bunch of guys and just stay in shape, lift weights, do a bunch of offensive line drills, did a lot of coaching with John Stinchcomb, who was a second-round draft pick from Georgia. Played for the Saints for 10 years, won a Super Bowl, so I got to pick his mind and just learn the game of football at a professional level from him, work on my technique and fundamentals all the way up until Pro Day. And then once Pro Day came along, I was still in Greenville for a little bit longer, was able to work out there. And then I came back to Tallahassee a day or two before the draft, and I've really just been doing my own kind of stuff right now. I got a trainer down here in Florida that I'm going to work with when I get back from Colts minicamp. So, I mean, it's every single day, it's a constant doing something that's going to help me improve my game to the next level.
How many hours can – I know there's like a fine line, a threshold where you don't want to – like you want to push yourself but not hurt yourself. How many hours a day can you actually train?
Well, when I'm in my routine, we pretty much go from 9 to 2. That consists of everything from lifting weights to running to O-line specific stuff and then board work and then go eat lunch, go kind of rest a little bit and then come back later in the day and just do more technique fundamental stuff for another 45 minutes to an hour. I mean, I'm in a position right now where this is, I don't have classes, I don't have another job, like this is my sole purpose right now. So I'm doing as much as my body can take. You go in the morning, crank out your stuff, you refuel your body, maybe take a nap, get in the cold tub. Seems like I'm in the cold tub every single day, and then you come back later in the day and do a little bit more, and then you start the whole process over the next day.
And Garrett, before we let you go, you've been generous with us. I know that you got a lot going on. Can you talk about a guy that's actually retiring, I think, in July, and that's you mentioned him in the beginning of the interview with Coach Jeff Connors. I think the world of him, and I thank him for all that he did for Pirate Nation and for EC for many years. Can you talk about what he means to and also the staff that worked with you as well?
That staff means the world to me. They brought in a kid who was severely undersized but would just do anything to get better. And Coach C knows so much about strength and conditioning. I mean, he's one of the best to ever do it. I got so much respect for him. I definitely consider him a friend after this. I'm thankful for everything he did. And honestly, he's just a true pirate. He goes in there and he attacks the day every single day. He has a chip on his shoulder. He'll do whatever it takes to win, and that's one thing he did with us. Like, he would do anything we needed, whether it was run more, lift more. He was always open to helping us get extra work and stuff like that. And he bleeds purple and gold. He loves that place to death. So I got so much love and respect for him, and I think he's just a great man.
In fact, it was funny. I knew we were interviewing today, and I thought about him, and I could hear him in my mind say, "Match my intensity," like, really loud. I don't want to, like make you go deaf, but match my intensity. That's what I think about when I think of Coach Connors.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he was a guy who, if you weren't bringing it, he was going to let you know, and if you weren't in there fired up, he was going to just be in your ear and get you on the same level as him.
Well, Garrett, I tell you what, I'm so excited for you, and we're pleased that there's some teams that are giving you opportunities. We're going to definitely keep in touch with you. We're pulling hard for you. It looks like this weekend, next weekend with the Colts and the Bills, and we're going to be following them closely. And just know there's a lot of us in Pirate Nation that want this really bad for you because of not only your great guy, but also the fact that you've worked really hard, not only the time at ECU, but now getting ready for the draft and now beyond.
Thank you very much. I really, truly, genuinely appreciate that. That means so much to me. Eastern North Carolina and Greenville is definitely a new home for me. I never thought a kid from Tallahassee, Florida, would be calling Greenville, North Carolina home, but that's definitely a place that has a piece of my heart, and I will forever be in debt to that place, and I definitely plan on being back soon. There's no telling what the future holds, but I know what, Pirate Nation, I'll always be a part of Pirate Nation, and I'll always be a Pirate for life, and that is definitely not the last time I'll be in Greenville, North Carolina, or Dowdy Thick, for that matter. I definitely plan on being back, being a regular, joining the Pirate Club, and all that good stuff, no matter where I end up in life.
We hold you to that. We need you, and good luck to you, my friend, and we'll talk to you in the next few weeks and see how things went.
Sounds good. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you for having me on.
What do you guys think about let's talk baseball now while we have a chance, because we got a big series against – we don't actually have a preview, but we'll talk a few minutes about baseball. What do you guys think about Cincinnati? It's, this is the year I'll always remember for 2019 rather, as the year of the doubleheader.
Game one's actually underway right now as we're playing, what, our seventh doubleheader. So things are underway up in Cincinnati. Hopefully we'll take care of business. I definitely think we'll win the series, and I like our chances of getting a sweep, but it's always hard to sweep a team, especially on the road, and Cincinnati is second in the conference now. So it's two weeks in a row that we've played the second-place team in the league. And so it'll be interesting to see how things go.
Yeah, I take two on the road would be good. If we can get the sweep, that's a bonus. But we need to take care of business and try to stay in that top eight RPI.
Man, I'm hearing go to three. What I saw last night, is that right, Bubba?
I'm sorry, say it again.
If we sweep, and I think it's going to be two out of three. Do you think but if we sweep Cincinnati, could our RPI go up to three? Did I misread that last night?
I have not seen any information on that, but I would say that's possible, depending on what else happens. Yeah.
Yeah.
If we're 36-11, I guess.
Yeah, and then it was something to that effect. If we Steve Parker that we're gonna have on the show put something on Facebook, and I was about to fall asleep, so I can't remember.
Well, your RPI is never just based on you. So,
it's RPI is five, right? It's five or six right now.
Right, but it's going to depend on what happens around us, too.
Right. That's what I mean. Like,
yeah.
It'll be
obviously, the people that we've already played, what they will do. And
correct.
No doubt about it.
All that factors in, so it's tough to project it. But
Yeah, I want to mention we got some breaking news about basketball. Have you heard about this, Kyle?
I have not.
All right, go for it, Bubba. You've got the information.
Yeah, we have a new 6-foot center committed for the 2020 class. He's out of Fayetteville. I'm trying to recall the name of the school. It's Village something Academy. But anyway, Steven Igo broke this news just a little bit ago. Definitely go to Hoist the Colors and check out that article.
Do you have any offers from anywhere, Bubba? Anything of note?
He did. I had the information in front of me, but not the most impressive offer list, but he was receiving some apparently fairly serious consideration from UConn. So, but Derek Kwanzaa is his name again, and he's in school now at Village something Academy in Fayetteville. He's originally from Ghana.
And as you know, his family invented the holiday Kwanzaa. The interesting fact.
But
what do you guys?
But that our 2019 class. Well, I guess we have 10 members in that class right now, and we've recently got a couple of 6'11" guys and Edra Luster and then the other's name, Luigi DeBoe.
You do, and you'll clean it up.
So what about overall? We got about, what, another week or so before we'll know the whole recruiting class, Bubba? It's like May 15th?
Yeah, May 15th, I believe, is the date when things wrap up. And with that conclusion of the signing period, we certainly hope to have either Coach Dooley and or some other staff members on, like Coach Chilius and Coach Rock, Steve Rockefort. Those guys are well known for what they've done in the past on the recruiting trail, and it certainly seems like they're getting the job done once again. And our guys, I know some of this may be affected just by the volume of players we're signing, because of I think that's the way they take the number of stars your players have and divide it. I may be mistaken on that, so that may have something to do with it. But there's no doubt in my opinion that this is a very solid class, and it currently ranks, I think, is something like 75th nationally and 7th out of 12 in the AAC. So,
yeah, that's good for us by our standards.
Right. I would say people hear 75th, and they don't – but when you take into consideration how many teams there are, yeah, and when you take into consideration how many teams there are, it just –
there's over 300 and some teams, right, I mean, in Division I. So 75 for East Carolina basketball is huge.
Without any type of success to use to your – to aid you in recruiting, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. All right.
So something else I wanted to mention, and we haven't talked about this, is you have Sean Armstrong, who pitched for the Pirates back in the Billy Godwin era, and then also Mike Wright, who had been pitching for the Baltimore Orioles. They actually did a look. It appeared there for a second that they were going to be teammates in Seattle, but Sean Armstrong was designated for assignment. And then he was claimed by the Baltimore Orioles, so they can kind of switch spots there. And Mike Wright's had a solid outing or two since he's been with the Mariners, and Sean Armstrong's had a solid outing or two with the Orioles. And
Sean Armstrong's name always made me think he should be in a mid-card tag team in the NWA.
Brad, like Brad Armstrong?
Yeah, Scott and Steve. There's a whole bunch of those Armstrongs.
That's a good point. I haven't thought about that. That's really funny. Yeah, so that we thought that was going to work out. It didn't work out, but that's baseball, right? Pro baseball, most major leagues.
And then as we're recording this, the second round of the Wells Fargo Championship down at Quail Hollow here in Charlotte is going on. And hopefully HV3 Harold Varner will have a better day today. Yesterday he shot 6 over, so hopefully he's going to need a heck of a day to have any shot at making the cut.
Yeah, I was getting ready to ask, do you think he'll make the cut? It's going to be kind of tight.
Right? Yeah, I want to say based on what I saw, Jason Duffner, I believe, and this was just less than 9 holes into the second round, he was already at 8 under. So Harold's going to have to go very low, and it's unfortunately looking like he will miss the cut.
Do you think he'll get a birdie?
Maybe a double eagle. Kyle, I think he will, but definitely.
Do you think he's serving? Is he going to be serving first? Or?
Well,
I don't know.
We'll see. Good luck to him, and hopefully he pulls it out.
I don't know anything about golf, guys. That was the joke. I guess you got.
I got the joke. Okay. So what do you guys think? Looks like for the rest of the podcast, I guess we'll just end it now. We're trying too hard. Where can we go to find us on social media?
I don't think anybody wants to. you can find us on social media on Facebook. Just go type in the usual search bar on Facebook, The Sports Objective. Find our page and like it, please. You can find us on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, and you can also email us at TheSportsOBJ@gmail.com.
And we're on Instagram at TheSportsObjective as well, so find us there.
And YouTube also.
Yeah,
YouTube channel.
We got a lot of
And we promise you things normally flow much, much better than this, and are not nearly
this
awkward.
This is the first time you've ever listened to The Sports Objective. We apologize.
Yeah, please listen to the archives, and then you'll like us better. So, in the meantime, thank you, Bubba. Thank you, Kyle. This is Dave Richmond, and you've been listening to The Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to The Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.